Well, goody, goody. I'm glad to be here again. And y'all bear with me because I was praising God before the services and I blew out my voice like I always do. But it's okay. I did it for Jesus. Now I'm going to make y'all suffer hearing me growl and cough and snort trying to talk. We're in 1 Samuel chapter 13. 1 Samuel chapter 13. And I liked our first song that talked about having patience and waiting on God and stuff like that. And in this very chapter, we're going to have a man who just could not wait. So we're going to look at that in just a moment. Saul reigned 1 year, and when he had reigned 2 years over Israel, so he had reigned the first year, and when he had reigned the second year, which means he was in his second year, possibly going into his third year, it says Saul chose him 3,000 men of Israel, whereof 2,000 were Saul in Michmash and in the mount of Bethel, and 1,000 were with Jonathan in Gibeah of Benjamin, and the rest of the people he sent away to their tents, or every man to his tent. So we see here that in his third year reign, Saul says, I'm going, instead of trying to keep everybody on guard and keeping everybody with a stick or a club or whatever in their hand, I'm going to pick me out 3,000 of the best chosen men, the fastest, the strongest, the bravest, or what he thought would be that way. He says, I'm going to pick me out 3,000 men. 2,000 of them I'm going to keep with me in Michmash of Bethel. And 1,000 were with Jonathan in Gibeon. So Jonathan, his son, was like his primary general or whatever. He had a couple other sons that we mentioned later. But Jonathan seemed to be one that just loved his dad enough that he would just go out and whoop anybody or anything just because dad was against it. Jonathan was a fighting man, a warrior type guy. And yet, when we get farther into the story here, we'll find out that him and David liked each other's personality, liked each other's manliness, and loved each other, not in some crooked way like some people would like to say, but as men love men, David and Jonathan were knit together. If Saul hadn't have gotten away, they'd have probably just been a fabulous team. But Saul got in the way of Jonathan to David. That's another story. But they leave here, they're in mismatch, and 1,000 of them were with Jonathan. So Jonathan's got 1,000 soldiers. Saul has 2,000. Well, naturally, he's the king, right? Keep more guys running. And Jonathan smote the garrison of the Philistines. That was his Geba. And the Philistines heard of it. And Saul blew the trumpet throughout all the land, saying, let the Hebrews hear. In other words, my son has gone out and whooped a bunch of them. Now, I don't know if they went to God and got permission. It doesn't look like they did. He just decided, well, I'm going to just go out here and I'm going to whoop me a bunch of these Philistines. And after he had done it, of course, the Philistines got all riled up and excited about it. And Saul's going to blow him a trumpet and say, look what my boy and look what I... And he takes it instead of saying, look what my boy did. We're going to see here he says, look what I did. Of course, him being the king, I guess you go out and fight for the king. Whatever gets done is done in the king's name, and he takes credit and glory and honor for it. So he blew a trumpet, and he said, all the Hebrews here, looky here, we're coming back. We're getting on with this thing. We're becoming a nation again, strong and fierce to be reckoned with. And all Israel heard say that Saul had smitten a garrison of the Philistines, and that Israel also was made an abomination with the Philistines. In other words, because of what Jonathan done, the Philistines are riled up. Said, look, you're supposed to be under us. You're supposed to be in servitude to us. You're supposed to be listening to what we got to say. And now you have done went out and whooped a few folks. You think you've done something, right? Yeah. They became an abomination. They became an upset to the Philistines, and the people were called together after Saul in Gilgal. So all the people, or the heads of the people, were called to the Gilgal because now the Philistines were angry. They were mad. They were out for blood. They says, we're going to get you back. And the Philistines gathered themselves together to fight with Israel. 30,000 chariots and 6,000 horsemen and the people of the land, and the people as the sand which is of the seashore in multitude, and they came up and pitched in Mishmash, eastward of Bethaven. Now, a chariot could hold as much as 10 guys, so if it says 30,000 folks in a chariot, it might not have been 30,000 chariots actually. Although I'm kind of figuring the Bible says 30,000 chariots, it means 30, but it could have been 300 or whatever. But the thing is, it says here that there was more of them than you want to shake a stick at. It was like the sand of the sea. Can you imagine you standing up there on your mountain, looking over there on that mountain, and your mountain looks like a few specks of folks on it. And on their mountain, all you see is people that form a mountain. There's a pile of them. There's a bunch of them. So you're sitting here, he says, you done kind of stirred up a hornet's nest here. You done fired these folks up. You done, as the Japanese said, we have awoken a sleeping giant. That's what they had done to the Philistines. These guys were sort of under control. They let them sort of do this, do that, as long as you didn't mess up too bad. And now you done went out and killed a bunch of Philistines. Yeah. And it says that there were 30,000 chariots. Now, if you remember what I just told you, there was 2,000 with Saul. There was 1,000 with Jonathan. There is 30,000 chariots, which could have one man or two men or even more men in it. 30,000 chariots and 6,000 infantry. Not infantry, but horsemen, cavalry. Men who had swords and spears and weaponry and armor and all that. So you got this vast army looking down at a bunch of peons, farmers. That's right. And he says, and when the men of Israel saw that they were in a strait, yeah, buddy, for the people were distressed, then the people did hide themselves in caves and in thickets and in rocks and in the places and in the pits. I'd have run too. There's no doubt about it. I got a good gun and I got a lot of ammo, but I don't have that many bullets. I mean, come on now. It says, and when the people of Israel saw. So you got the soldiers there. And then, of course, you got some bystanders. There's always bystanders who want to come look at the battle. Some of them sits up on the hill with their little stools. And that's what they did in the Civil War. They put out little pews and stuff, and people actually sat on the sidelines and watched them fight. Well, anytime you got a battle fix to take place, there's always somebody, a historian or a picture taker or a newsman, who wants to be right there beside it and see what's going on. And so the newsman calls back to the rest of them and says, look, this ain't going to go good. This ain't going to go. The nightly news was not in our favor here. It says, and they were in a strait. They were being compressed. They were in a place where it was too narrow for them to get to. It says they were being pinched in by this army of the Philistines. They were in a strait, for the people were in distress. This would have been, you are just that many people coming at you, and your army ain't but 3,000 folks. They're going to walk right over us like we're not even here. And when they get through walking over us, because they're still mad, because they're still angry, they're going to take it out on our wives and our children and everything else they can get their hands on until they get done spoiling all the spoiling they want to spoil. This is not going to... Jonathan done made these folks plumb mad. And they were hiding in caves and in thickets, even in briar patch. So if I get into this briar patch, it might be a little stickery here, but they might not come in after me. It might be a little tough, because some of them briars over there, the thorns are about that long. If I can get all crawled up under this bush, maybe they'll leave me alone. I mean, that's plumb scared when you'll get up in a briar thicket. And in caves, and in the high places, and in pits. Let's dig some holes and cover ourselves up, because we're already doomed and messed up. And some of the Hebrews went over Jordan to the land of Gad and Gilead. So in other words, there was a place across Jordan that was so far away from everything else, they said, look, if we do get whipped, I'm going to have a head start on getting on farther south. I'm gonna be all the way as far as I can get and still be in Israel. But if it seems like we're just totally getting whipped, I'm gonna keep on going. He says they went over Jordan. They went into Gad and Gilead, into the land of Gilead. As for Saul, he was yet at Gilgal. And all the people followed him trembling. They're sitting here saying, Saul, please get some good sense here. Saul, please don't push this to the limit. Saul, why don't we just go up to these folks and say, here's a white flag. We messed up. We apologize. Don't let this happen to us. So they were following Saul trembling. They were following Saul because their mind was, I can see what's out there. I know what we're fixing to run into. And it says, and he was at Gilgal, and the people followed him trembling. And he tarried 7 days according to the set time of Samuel had appointed. But Samuel came not to Gilgal, and the people were scattered from him. So he told Saul, he says, look, this is Samuel talking to Saul, says, look, I'm going to go off and pray or meditate or whatever. I'm going to get word from God, whatever. I want you to wait 7 days. Don't do anything for 7 days. Not 6 3/4, not 6 1/2, 7 full days. He says, I want you to go there, and I want you to wait for me there, and I want you to prepare yourself there. And it says, and as the time was clicking on for the 7 days, I'm guessing the people are saying, well, Samuel, he's just going to bebop right back over here and we'll be okay. Samuel's going to take care of this thing. But Samuel didn't come. And the first day they looked around and they're sitting here saying, no Samuel, where's God in all this? There's 3,000 of us, 30,000 of those. A few of them started sneaking on off. Day two came. They looked out there, and that army looked even bigger because they wasn't no 3,000 of them. Now they're like 2,000 maybe, and they're sneaking on off. By the time day seven got there, I know said seven got there. It wasn't finished yet. Because day seven starts and has 24 hours to finish, correct? So when day seven got there, and he tarried 7 days according to a set time that Samuel had appointed, but Samuel came not to Gilgal, and the people were scattered from him. In other words, we done got down to there ain't many folks left. In fact, I think it tells us we've got about 600 left here in a few minutes. Now, we done went from 3,000 brave old boys down to 600 pretty soon. And he says, the people are scattered away from him. And Saul said, bring hither the burnt offering to me and peace offering. And he offered the burnt offering. He says, now some people, and I think I've even preached this myself, they violated a rule by him doing the offering. But at that time, from what I understand, from what I read, him or a designated priest could have made an offering because there was no set place for offerings at that time. So he could have made the offering. And I don't, from what I'm understanding here, and we're going to get to in a minute, I don't think that God took the kingdom away because he burnt the offering, but because he just didn't wait. He was told to wait. He was told to be patient. He was told God was going to bring something on. And the people kept scattering away. And while the people were scattering away, he says, if I'll just go ahead and make these offerings, make my supplication to God, maybe the people will say, God's with us. And maybe the people will say, well, because God's with us, we'll just hang right in there and take care of this thing. So it says, and Saul said, bring hither the burnt offering to me and the peace offering. And he offered the burnt offering. So far we've done the burnt offering. We have not done the peace offering yet. And he offered the burnt offering. And it came to pass, as soon as he had made an end of the burnt offering, behold, Samuel came. He's in the middle of doing what Samuel would have done when he got there. He's in the middle of doing what he should have waited to do. He's in the middle of doing it. He hasn't done the peace offering yet, but in the middle of the burnt offering, or at the end of the burnt offering, when that's getting done, where he's getting ready to do the peace offering, Samuel came. And Saul went out to meet him. He didn't go ahead and continue offering because he knew he might want to stop there. He went out to meet him that he might salute him. Let me go out here and make a big deal and salute Samuel. The people will see that we've done the burnt offering. We'll see that Samuel's here. Samuel will be all okay with me. Samuel will go ahead and make the peace offering. Samuel will go ahead and make things right, and the people will gather back up and be with me. That's what he's hoping. He goes out and salutes Samuel. Of course, Samuel was the prophet, the priest, to be honored, to be saluted. And Samuel said, "What hast thou done? What hast thou done? Look, I told you to wait 7 days." That didn't mean he wouldn't start on the eighth day, but he told him to wait 7 full days. "What hast thou done?" And of course, Saul and his nice traditions. And Saul said, "Because I saw the people were scattered from me." I bet that's exactly the way he said it. He probably wasn't near as rough and tough sounding right then as you thought he would be, this old big old boy with all the muscles. "The people are leaving me. I was afraid I'd be all alone. It's just going to have me and Jonathan here to fight this fight. Because the people were scattered from me, and that thou camest not within the day appointed." Uh-oh, he came. He came before the eighth day. It wasn't the eighth day yet. He came on time. He got to where he was supposed to be. "And because thou did not come on the day appointed, and that the Philistines gathered themselves together at Mizpah." Can you see them out there, Samuel? There's chariots everywhere. There's horses everywhere. All their armor's just a-glittering and a-shining in the sun. Can you see them out there? "Man, I felt like we didn't have a chance." And, of course, I'm going to blame it on you because you didn't come on time. I mean, hell, if you'd have been here on day one, I wouldn't be doing this right now, right? I waited at least 6.5 days, almost 7 days. And when I saw you would not come or had not come, I decided to go ahead and do this to keep the people together. "Therefore," said I, Saul talking, "the Philistines will come down and now upon me in Gilgal, and I have made no supplication to the Lord." In other words, if I'm going to die today, they're fixing to swoop down on top of us, I at least need to be right with God. I just need to have my business straight. I could see that the Philistines were going to come. I could see the great number of them. I could see there's only 600 of us. I could see that I'm outnumbered. So if I'm going to die today, I want to die right. I want to be okie-dokie with God. Don't we do like that sometimes? He says, "And I had not made any supplication." In other words, I had not sat down and prayed. I had not sat down and asked God for help. I have not sat down and done anything that I should have done already, because I've been just waiting and watching these people leave and go away from me. "I had not made any supplication to the Lord." And then he says, "I forced myself." I forced myself. I didn't really want to do this, Samuel. I just, you know, I had to make myself do this, because if I hadn't, the people would have been all gone. I had to twist my own arm to make this sacrifice happen. I burnt this offering, but I didn't do it because I wanted to. I forced myself. Man, that's like having me drugged to church almost. Yeah. You get called into church, and I made myself go to church because I just had to go to church because it's the right thing to do, right? I forced myself. And so he says, "I forced myself, therefore, to offer a burnt offering." And we still hadn't got to the peace offering yet. It still hadn't been done. He says, "I made myself do this thing because I needed to do this thing, because the people were going away from me. because I was not at peace with God yet. I had not got myself right with God. The people needed to be anointed and taken care of. And then Samuel said to Saul, "Thou hast done foolishly. Thou hast not kept the commandment of the Lord thy God." Now, what was the commandment? Wait 7 days. It wasn't don't do a sacrifice. It wasn't not make a peace offering. It was to wait 7 days. He says, "Thou hast done foolishly. Thou hast not kept the commandment of the Lord thy God which commanded thee. For now would the Lord be now would the Lord have established thy kingdom unto Israel forever." Now think about this. You remember Adam and Eve? They had one law. All they had to do was this one law, the first two families. This is the first king. When Adam and Eve broke one law, it cost everything. Now, is God going to say to this? Now, we know other kings made mistakes and other kings did way wicked stuff and terrible things, way worse than what Saul ever did. But this is king number one. So if you're king number one and you mess up, God cannot just sit back and say, "Well, I'm going to let this one slide and then I'm going to let the next one slide and I'm going to let the next one." No, God said, "This is the first king. You messed up how many times? One time." And how bad was it? He couldn't wait 7 days. Boy, is that some swift judgment? Is that some, "Don't mess with me, I'm God and you're the king. Don't mess with me, I'm the one in power and you're not"? He says, "And Samuel said unto Saul, Thou hast done foolishly. Thou hast not kept the commandment of the Lord thy God, which he commanded thee, for now would the Lord have established thy kingdom upon Israel forever." He would have, had you waited. He would have established you forever. But because you had no patience, because you didn't trust God, because you didn't think God would deliver you, because you figured, "I'm going to have to do this all by myself, and look, it's not going to happen." Because you didn't have faith in God to trust Him to wait 7 days. And he tells him point blank. Now, I don't think Samuel knew that David was going to be it yet, because we know that's a little bit later on. But Samuel knew from his prophet standpoint, from his intuition and all that, God just took the kingdom away from you. God just took your kingdom. And he's not even going to skip you and go to your son. He's going to take it from you. He's going to take it from Jonathan. He's going to take it from the rest of your sons. And he's going to even take it from the tribe of Benjamin. Not even the tribe of Benjamin will stay in the king's thing. "But now thy kingdom shall not continue." Whew. Here he is. He's already scared to death. He sees he's got an army out there that's innumerous. And now God himself has turned against him. It was bad when you got to fight the Philistines, but now even God is against him. It says, "But now thy kingdom shall not continue. The Lord hath sought him a man after his own heart," and we know who that is, "and the Lord hath commanded him to be captain over the people, because thou hast not kept that which the Lord commanded thee." And as we go through these studies and things like that, we see Adam and Eve lost everything because of one sin. The king lost his throne because of one sin. A man died because they carried the Ark of the Covenant back the wrong way. God, when he does things, he is serious. He doesn't play around. And we in this day and time, we think that God is so easygoing and stuff. When I read the Old Testament, I say here, I have to be at awe with myself that, have I pushed him too far? Have I pushed him too far? Because when I go through life and I say, did I do that on purpose or sumptuously or by mistake or by accident? What was my motive when I decided to do this thing that I know I shouldn't have done anyways? Did I actually go too far? You see, he could even remove us from our positions or whatever just like that. He says, "But now thy kingdom shall not continue. The Lord has sought him a man after his own heart. In other words, God has picked him out a man, found him a man. He knows right where he's at. And this man will do the will of God. Now, we know David messed up. But David never turned from God. David never quit worshiping God, never quit serving God. He did some things he shouldn't have done. But he never lost faith in God. He always was going to God for direction, always going to God for a way out, going for God for which way to do. Saul here decides to take it into his own hands and say, I'm going to kill this burnt offering and I'm going to take care of this thing because I need to make supplication and do this. But yet he could not wait the full 7 days. So I found me a man after my own heart, and the Lord hath commanded him to be captain over the people, because thou hast not kept that which the Lord commanded thee. This God stuff is serious. I mean, I hate to say it. I'm not trying to scare anybody, even myself. But the thing is, when we on purpose take doing God stuff into our own hands, we better be careful. And Saul arose and get him up from Gilgal to Geba of Benjamin. So Samuel rose up. Sometimes I get tongue twisted there. Samuel rose up, left Saul sitting there for a minute, and he goes to Gibeah of Benjamin. That's another town on down the road a piece. And it looks like Saul follows after him. Saul trying to get back in his good graces or whatever. And Samuel rose and get him to Gilgal of Gibeah, from Gilgal unto Gibeah of Benjamin. And Saul numbered the people that were present with him about 600. Not 600,000, not 6,000, but 600. We done went from 3,000 to 600. And I didn't do the percentages there, but that's not a good percentage. That's not even a... That ain't even what you want to go out there and wave a flag at them with. That's... And you got to think now. Let's just think. About a 20%. Yeah. And guess what? There's no swords except two. They only have ox goads and axes and mattocks, these things you chop in the dirt with, and hoes and rakes and stuff like that. You got 600 men armed with hoes and rakes and pitchforks, no armor, no shields, going up against the other army. 30,000 chariots. 600 cavalry. 6,000 cavalry. Anyway, it's a bunch of folks. And he follows him over to Gibeah of Benjamin. And Saul and Jonathan his son and the people that were present with them abode in Gibeah of Benjamin. But the Philistines encamped at Michmash. So you got two mountains here. One army on this side and one army on that side. And there's a big valley like between them there. And it says, Saul and Jonathan his son and the people that were present with him in Gibeah of Benjamin. So in other words, the army was so small now that Jonathan wasn't over there with 1,000 and Saul over here with 2,000, but they were all huddled up together now. They're in a strait. We've been done pressed down to 600 folks, and we can't even go around and surround them or even attack them from the side or behind, because there's not enough of them to spread out. We just got to stay right here. So they're going to go to Gibeah, which is a little bit farther away, and they're going to hide. And they're going to wait for the best outcome that could possibly come. But they're not even able to go out and attack. There are not even enough of them to go out and scare them. They're going to sit there and hope that they don't get overrun. And so they're sitting there in this little place called Gibeah of Benjamin. But the Philistines encamped at Michmash, and the spoilers came out of the camp of the Philistine. That's people that just go out and get what they want when they want to, how they want to. And the spoilers came out of the Philistines in three companies. I don't know how many spoilers there were, but Saul and his army didn't even fight Saul and his army didn't even go out to deter them. Saul and his army stayed right where they were, huddled up. These people went out and stole, raped, pillaged, whatever they wanted to do, just the way they wanted to, and nobody could stop them. It says, and the spoilers came out of the camp of the Philistines in three companies. One company turned unto the way that leadeth to Ophrah, and unto the land of Sheol. And Sheol, I looked, said, is a land of foxes. That's how it goes. So I don't know if that's Sheol or Shaul. I guess that's how you get your fox shawls. I don't know. But anyways, says it was called that land because it was filled with foxes. And another company turned by the way of Betharon. And another company turned to the way of the border that looketh to the valley of Zeboam toward the wilderness. So you got three companies. They all go in a different direction, and Zeboam actually means the land of serpents or the land of snakes, vipers. And it doesn't say whether they were poisonous vipers or not, but undoubtedly this land, this valley there, was loaded down with snakes, and it was loaded down with snakes of all kinds of colors. And undoubtedly the colors of the snakes, different colors, just amazed all the people that went through there. So the valley of Zeboam, toward the wilderness. I don't think I'd want to spend the night on the ground much in Zeboam. But anyways, it was called the Valley of Snakes or Serpents. So we got these three companies, and they're going out, and there's nobody to stop them. The Lord's not stopping them. Let that king you wanted take care of you. He's showing right now that a king ain't all you need. You need me. I could have just, thundered from heaven and just took care of this. But no, you wanted a king. And now look at you, king. He's all hid up in a hole somewhere, shaking and shivering and scared to death. Your people, these Philistines are going all over Israel here, robbing and stealing and taking just what they want. And nobody can stop them. And the one who could have stopped him, you rejected. You rejected him. You said, we want a king. What you've been doing is nice, but we want a king. Somebody with flags and trumpets and can run up and down the street and look all royal and all this kind of stuff. Well, he don't look too royal right here. He's hid up in a hole, scared to death with 600 guys. And then I remember the fact that David ran around with 600 guys. I was making a fool out of this guy when he had his whole army. There's a difference in mentality there. David trusted God. Him and his 600 men could do all kind of stuff. Saul had 3,000. They'd run like scared chickens. And it says, and there was no smith found throughout all the land of Israel. For the Philistines said, lest the Hebrews make themselves swords and spears. In other words, when the Philistines took over, they took all the people who had the ability to know how to make a sword or a spear, even plows and stuff like that. They even took those men and brought them over to Philistia where they could control them, take care of them, make sure. So that way there was nobody in Israel that could make a spear or a sword or a one of them big hammers that they use or anything else that they use in war, them mallets and things like that. So in all of Israel, there's not one man who knows how to work an iron. Not one man who knows how to make steel. Not one man who could make a good sword. It says here, and they did that on purpose. I mean, if you take the ability to make armaments away from people, they can't fight. That's what they want to do to America. They want to fix the Constitution where they can come take your sword and your spear and all those things. I know that's not what it is, but that's what they're doing. Same thing. And there was no smith found throughout all the land of Israel. Not one single blacksmith. Not one single man pounding out iron, making a sword or a spear or something like that. In fact, if you wanted to get a farming tool, you had to go all the way to over there and get one from them. Now, I know in the next place it talks about having a file, but I think that file means they had to go over and pay somebody to sharpen their stuff. So it says here, there was no blacksmith, couldn't make a spear, couldn't make a sword, but all the Israel went down to the Philistines to sharpen every man his share or his coulter or his axe or his mattock. In other words, you wore them out till they were dull, and then you had to go beg the Philistines to let somebody sharpen them. Have you ever tried to cut down a tree with a dull axe? Or plow with a bad plow or something like that? It just all over the place. So if you wanted to plow and chop down trees and do your work, you had to go kiss up to the Philistines and say, look, here's my axe. It's been a good axe, but it needs sharpening. Would you please let me sharpen it? I'll pay you. I'll give you money, whatever it takes, but I just need to sharpen my axe. They wouldn't let them make a sword, though. And you remember back a few chapters back, they whipped, who was it, the Ammonites? You thought they'd have picked up all their swords. I don't know why they didn't. Maybe they just figured their slingshots and all was good enough. And then a few weeks before that, they had whipped another bunch, and they could have picked up their swords twice. They had abilities to pick up swords, and yet they didn't for whatever reason. I have no idea. But it says in all of Israel, maybe because they're afraid that if they picked up the swords, the Philistines would come and attack them quicker. But it says here, if you wanted your axe sharpened, or your mattock, or your coulter, or your share, every man had to go to the Philistines and make those things happen. Yet, they had a file for the mattock, and for the coulter, and for the forks of the axes, and for the forks, and for the axes to sharpen the goad. Now, I don't think they had enough stuff to make a sword. You might could have took your hoe and beat it down flat and razor sharpened the edge for a weapon. You might could have kept your axe razor sharp for a weapon. You might could, I don't think you're packing your plow around with you for a weapon, but some of them old boys might have been bad enough. But even the goad, and we know there was one man in the Bible who took an ox goad and he whooped 600 folks. But God was all over that. But all these tools that they had, whether they had a goad or a hammer or whatever they might have been packing, not one of them had a sword or a spear. Not one of them had armor. Not one of them had a shield. Not one of them had any kind of armament that would be even capable of going up against the Philistines. And it came to pass in the day of the battle, that there was neither sword nor spear found in the hand of any of the people that were with Saul and Jonathan, but with Saul and Jonathan, his son, was there found. In other words, in all the land, two people out of 600 had a sword or a spear. Two people with weapons of war. That's how Australia got messed up. That's how some of these countries over in Europe are messed up. Out of all those things, they took all their long-range weapons, stuff like that. You keep your little old shotgun, but you can't have your long-range rifles. You can't have this. It says, out of all of this nations, two guys had a sword or a spear to go up against 30,000 chariots and 6,000 horsemen. Not a contest. Just the horsemen would have run over them like they wasn't even there. It says here, and the garrison of the Philistines went out at the passage of mismatch. In other words, these spoilers went out and done all they wanted to do because there wasn't a single soul on the Israelites that could stop them. Now it came to pass upon the day that Jonathan and his son, the son of Saul, said unto the young man that bare his armor. At least he had some armor there. It says he did. So no doubt he had a sword and some armor. Come and let us go over to the Philistines. Garrison. That is on the other side, but he told not his father. Now you would say, are you crazy? You and your armor bearer, you had 1,000 guys, I don't know where they went, but you and your armor bearer, that's all that's left of you and your bunch, pretty much. And you're going to cross over this little valley, and you're going to go charge and challenge the Philistines. Of course, he might have been saying, if we're going to die, let's die like men today, you know. let us be men. It says here, and he came upon that day. In other words, that night while they were sitting there, maybe he crawled over during the night for sunrise to come up, but whatever, he says, him and his armor bearer. And these were the son of Saul. You'd figure he'd be standing back letting his army go take care of business, but this young man was a fighting man. He wasn't going to go down without a fight. Come and let us come over to the Philistines' garrison that is on the other side. But he told not his father, and Saul tarried in the utter part of Gibeah. In other words, he was shaking and hiding over there, maybe under the rock or under a pomegranate tree, which is in Migron. And the people were with him were 600 men. In other words, not anybody except Jonathan and his armor bearer. Nobody else came with them. This ain't like a little crew goes out, we're going to get this thing. Two men are going to go out against these Philistines. His daddy's all hid up under a rock, under a pomegranate tree, shivering and shaking and quaking. And Jonathan says, we got to do something about this. We got to take care of this. Even if we die, let's die like men, you know. Let's go get to it. And Ahiah, the son of Ahitub, Ichabod's brother, the son of Phinehas, the son of Eli, the Lord's priest of Shiloh, wearing the ephod, and the people knew not that Jonathan was gone. So it appears now, it doesn't say for a fact that they'd got the Ark of the Covenant, but it appears like the man who was in the priest's office at that time, Ahiah, which was the son of Atub, Ichabod's brother, and we know Ichabod was Phinehas' son who was born prematurely at the time that the Ark of the Covenant was taken. So some of these old names are coming back into play here. But Ichabod stands for the Lord has left us, gone from us. But Ahiah, the son of Ahitub, is now wearing the ephod. He's now in the priest's stead. And it would appear that if he's in the priest's stead, he has the Ark of the Covenant, maybe possibly somewhere around, possibly. And he's the Lord's priest in Shiloh, wearing the ephod. At least he's wearing the priestly garments, not of just a low priest, but of the high priest. And the people knew that Jonathan was gone. And between the passages by which Jonathan sought to go over unto the Philistines' garrison was two sharp rocks. On the one side was a sharp rock. On the other side was a sharp rock. And the name of it of one was Bozes, and the name of the other was Sina. The forefront of the one was situate northward over against Michmash, and the other southward over against Gibeah. And Jonathan said to the young man that bare his armor, it'd be a good time to have a talk with the guy that you're going to die with, right? He said unto the man who's bearing his armor, he says, Jonathan said unto the young man to bear his armor, come, let us go over unto the garrison of these uncircumcised. It may be that the Lord will work for us. Jonathan had not lost faith in God. Jonathan had not done like his father, had been disobedient. Jonathan still stood by the stuff. And Jonathan said unto his young man to bear his armor, come, let us go over unto the garrison which of these uncircumcised. In other words, these are heathens. They have no right to attack us. They have no right to put us under bondage. They have no right. Let's go over against these folks who are uncircumcised, who are not God's people, who are not the chosen ones, who should not be over us. Let's go over against them, and just maybe the Lord might work for us. Just maybe. Just maybe. For there is no restraint of the Lord to save by many or by few. God wasn't worried about how many Israelites were over there with Saul. God doesn't need an army. God doesn't need 300,000 chariots and 600,000 horsemen. God can speak from heaven and take care of business. He can thunder, lightning and thunder down. And Jonathan knew this. Jonathan also didn't know this, but he believed this. It wasn't just I know this can take place. I believe this can take place. God is able to do exceedingly abundantly above all that we can ask or think always. He said to the man, let's go to these garrison, these uncircumcised. It may be that the Lord will work for us, for there is no restraint to the Lord to save by many or few. Man, if we could get a hold of that. There is no restraint. God is able. God is all power. God is everything. There is nothing that could hold God back from doing what He wants to do. Let's go fight the Lord's fight and give Him honor and glory for what He's going to do. There is no restraint of what He could do. And his armor bearer said unto him, do all that is in thine heart. I might have to stop there, because do all that is in thine heart would have scared me to death. So, you crazy? Me and you? I understand what you said. And you know that armor bearer had to have a lot of faith too. I mean, here I am. I've been hanging with Jonathan. I've been side by side with Jonathan. This man has virtue. This man is virtuous. This man is valor. This man is honest and has integrity. What better guy to be with if you're going to die? What better guy to hang with? A man who trusts the Lord. A man who believes that God has power. I'm going to stick with him. He says, do all that is in thine heart. Do all that is in thine heart. Turn thee. Behold, I am with thee according to thy heart. In other words, whatever you want to do, I'm with you. I am with you. If you go left, I'll go left. You go right, I'll go right. If you want to whip the Philistines, we're going to go whip some Philistines. And we're going to stop right there tonight, because we fixed to have a fight going on. And it's going to be serious. Brother Keith, would you pray for us, please?